This is Studio 360, and I am Kurt Anderson. Next weekend, The Imitation Game comes out. It's a movie starring Benedict Cumberbatch as the English mathematician Alan Turing, who cracked the code the Germans were using during World War II.
You need me a lot more than I need you. I like solving problems, Commander. And Enigma is the most difficult problem in the world.
No, Enigma isn't difficult, it's impossible. Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Good. Let me try, and we'll know for sure, won't we?
Historians reckon that Turing's work may have shortened the war by a couple of years and saved millions of lives. But he's still not quite a household name. The 2001 film Enigma, written by Tom Stoppard, left Turing out of the code-breaking story completely. But Alan Turing is now finally fully having his day. He's appeared as a character in plays, a dozen novels, even a few musicals. And now, with The Imitation Game, he's becoming larger than life, a kind of mythic figure in science, like Nikola Tesla or even Albert Einstein. Studio 360's Eric Molinsky has our story.
Graham Moore wrote the screenplay for The Imitation Game, starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Alan Turing. But he's been obsessed with Turing since he was a kid.
Among awkward, dorky teenagers without a lot of friends, like myself, Alan Turing was this object of kind of cult-like fascination. He was this kind of campfire legend. Did you know that the man who secretly invented the computer was gay, and no one knows because he was persecuted by the government after the war?
Sounds like a good movie. Until he tried pitching it around Hollywood.
And they were like, that's the worst idea for a movie we've ever heard. No one will ever make that. No one will ever see that. That is a totally unproducible film. It's career suicide. Don't write it.
But then he met a producer who had just optioned a biography of Turing.
And I instantly freaked out and launched into this completely insufferable 15-minute monologue. And I could see her, like, inching away from me step by step. Like, who is this psycho and why has he invaded my kitchen and why will he not stop talking about Alan Turing?
See? Told you he was obsessed. Moore did figure out a commercial angle for the film. He sold it as a World War II thriller. Turing and his team are racing against the clock to decipher the Enigma machine.
It's the greatest encryption device in history, and the Germans use it for all major communications. If the Allies broke Enigma, well, it would turn into a very short war indeed.
It all goes quiet, even the click of the keys of the Enigma machine. She watches Alan unlock the tea mug. He ludicrously keeps chained to a radiator, as though someone could possibly mistake the owner for someone other than Alan, as though any of the other...
Jen 11 is an astrophysicist who wrote a novel about Turing called A Madman Dreams of Turing Machines. Turing's big insight was that Enigma was too complicated for a person to decrypt it. Even him, and he thought he was a genius. So he built something kind of dumb to crack the code.
He imagined a machine like a typewriter, and that machine would read kind of a tape, and that the typewriter-like machine becomes hardware, and the zeros and ones, the tape that it reads in the old-fashioned language, becomes like the software.
So Turing is the architect of the computer. How come this guy isn't a household name across America? Well, two reasons. His code-breaking was top secret for decades. Also, Turing had been disgraced. He was outed by an ex-lover in 1952.
When he was on trial for having sex with another man, he raised his hand and he said, yes, I'm a homosexual. I did have sex with this man, but I did nothing wrong. It shouldn't be a crime. And at the same time that he was doing that, he never rose his hand to say, oh, and by the way, I broke the Enigma code during the Second World War and saved 14 million lives.
The judge gave him a choice. He could go to jail or take shots of estrogen, a kind of chemical castration. He chose the latter so he could keep working as a scientist. And there's another reason why Turing is such a compelling figure. Not only is he brave, truthful, and visionary, but his death is a mystery. 2 years after the trial, he was found lying next to an apple laced with cyanide. The official cause of death was suicide.
He did love the film Snow White.
Here's Jan 11 again.
And he did love to chant,
dip the apple, in the brew. Let the sleeping death seep through.
Let the sleeping death seep through. And it was sort of so poetic. If it's not the case that that's how he committed suicide, it sort of seems such a literary shame.
But maybe not an operatic shame. David Simpatico and Justine Chen are writing an opera called The Life and Deaths of Alan Turing.
Oh, Alan.
They're using all the different theories about his death as a framing device to explore his life.
Something that Justine pointed out early to me, because I was like, this guy's a gay hero. He should be an icon. He should be an inspiration. I said, well, he's not a gay hero. He's a hero for everyone. But it's about how do you live your life, whoever you are, to the fullness that you want without threat of curtailment or imprisonment or judgment.
This is from one of their workshop rehearsals.
We're in Turing's home in his laboratory. I see smoke. I see potions bubbling. There's an apple that he picks up and it glistens. He's about to take this bite out of this poisoned apple.
Later, we see how his death could have been an accident or government assassination, which some people in the know believe could be true. His final death is the most fanciful. Turing uploads his consciousness to a computer.
And the thing about his obsession with Snow White and the apple, part of it was about the witch's transformation. In his eyes, she became transhuman because her soul went from one container, the evil queen, into the old hag. And for him, he saw that as the soul and the mind, not to be imprisoned by the body, but you could put that soul and your mind and your essence in other containers.
Uploading your brain to a computer, creating artificial intelligence. These are really cutting-edge ideas today. And of course, that's another reason why Turing is hot right now. I mean, it's kind of obvious. We live and breathe computers. Or as they were called in his lifetime, universal Turing machines.
Steve Jobs, for example, was obsessed with Alan Turing.
Graham Moore.
So was Bill Gates. And maybe that's the interesting dichotomy of Turing, that both Jobs and Gates were hugely influenced by him.
There is even a rumor that the Apple logo was an homage to Alan Turing's death. Steve Jobs denied it because it's crazy. But as time goes by, Turing does feel like a prophet. The Man from the Future. That's the title of a rock opera about Turing.
1936. In Grantchester that summer, he lay in a field and dreamed of machines.
It's by the Pet Shop Boys, and it was performed at the Proms in London last summer. It's the contradictions in Alan Turing's life that make him so fascinating. In Britain, he was a deep insider, entrusted with many secrets. But he was also an outsider and a maverick. And that's very much how the tech world sees itself today.
There is no one definitive portrait of Turing that's the right one. I think he's going to continue to be colored and transmuted by our lenses. And over time, we just hope we get closer to a sort of honest portrayal and celebration of this person and the impact that they've had on our lives.
Like the fact that this story was written and edited on a universal Turing machine. For Studio 360, I'm Eric Molinsky.